Chris, you set the scene for us. You are at Kraft Hockeyville. Where is it and how tiny is that rink?
It's at a place called Lucan, Ontario, which is northwest of London, about 2.5 hour drive from Toronto. And you know, it's a small town, a rural town farming community. And, you know, it's actually pretty cool. It's the first one of these that I've attended. You know, one of the NHL people that's been to a bunch of them said it's the smallest rink since they did it in Sylvan Lake few years back. And, you know, I think they can get it into about 1,600 people somewhere or so inside, and they have 1,200 in a big tent outside, which is, you know, almost equal to what the town's population is. So, you know, pretty big event, and you know, we're kind of in Leafs country here, and I think with the Leafs being part of the game and John Tavares playing, you know, his first game, so to speak, as a member of the team, there's a little bit more buzz even than there might have been.
Sure, yeah, I get that. We recall that Sylvan Lake game famously here because, of course, the Flames played in it, and yeah, the cameras, I don't know how much room there was between the last row and the wall, and it still felt like you could only see a tiny portion of the ice. They were zoomed out as far as they could. Nothing quite like a small barn in a tiny community where it almost feels like the church in some of these communities that keeps everyone together and chatting and keeping up to speed on what's going on around town. I worked in the BCHL for 4 years, and that whole sort of 800 to 2,500 seat arena in a small town, that feels familiar, my friend. Are you wearing gloves? Do you have the long underwear on? Is it one of those ones?
It's pretty chilly, I think, to get the ice to a good spot, but you know, I'm good. We still got some humidity out here. It still doesn't feel like hockey weather outside, but you know, it's pretty cool. It's hard for me not to think of, you know, what it might be if you know, I grew up in a small town in Ontario, and you know, had a game like this ever come to my town, no matter which NHL teams were there, I would have been pretty pumped. And, you know, it really is mostly about the kids when you do something like this.
So they bus in, bus out, or how does it work with the Leafs? I don't imagine there's a massive five-star hotel in Lucan right next to the rink.
No, it's close enough to London, though, where there is some hotels, and then the Senators will fly out from there after the game. The Leafs will bus back to Toronto, and, you know, much like all the preseason schedule, you know, they got another group of players playing tomorrow, and you know, a couple games after that. So it's a hectic time of year. You know, I think there's probably too many preseason games on the schedule as a whole, but, you know, doing something like this, I think, is a worthwhile thing that the NHL's, you know, done for the last 11 or 12 years.
No question. Let's stay with the Leafs. One of the RFAs that has not signed since we last spoke is William Nylander. Now, two are off the list. We'll get to those. What are the tacks taken by the players' camp versus what Leafs management is looking for in this negotiation, or is that even a little bit foggy?
Well, I would say this is likely the most contentious of the remaining RFAs that are unsigned and in camp. And you know, it's not to say that they're having a war of words or anything like that, but, you know, I really do get the sense that the Nylander camp is pretty dug in. You know, Michael Nylander, William's father, had a long career in the league, and you know, is very well versed in the business side of things. You know, wouldn't you know, necessarily, you know, I don't think flinch from taking a hard stance from the player side. And I know he's very involved, you know, with his son's career in this negotiation. You know, the Leafs have you know, kind of made their point known that, you know, they have a lot of players to sign in the next year and a half. There's only so much money under the cap, and they're trying to convince everybody to take maybe a little bit less in absolute market value, in the effort to you know, keep this team together with a, you know, a promising young core, and you know, in that they haven't been able to find much movement, and you know, it's impossible to say. We're still 2 weeks from the start of the season, you know, right now, but you know, just based on my sense of how things have gone, I wouldn't be surprised if this one, you know, went right up till October 3rd and perhaps beyond it, when the Leafs are due to play their first regular season game, and you know, it's a tough spot. I think these guys, you know, we've seen a few of the other players sign. I think that, you know, in those cases, the gap wasn't quite as large. You know, William Nylander has some unique, you know, factors in his contract, you know, namely even that Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews are going to sign a deal sometime in the next year. And you know, if he signs now and goes too low, I mean, you could see, say, Matthews get twice as much money as he does. And, you know, I don't think that he thinks he's half the player. So, you know, it's, you know, one of these ones where they're pretty dug in, and, you know, I don't see a resolution, you know, coming here on the horizon too soon.
It's reminds me of the Johnny Gaudreau situation here in Calgary. They're both players that are coming out of entry level, but they only have 2 years of service time in the NHL because they didn't amass 40 games. Johnny Gaudreau played one DeBern year, one of his contract, and I think Nylander was in the 20s. So there is no, obviously, arbitration, but there's also no offer sheet opportunity for other teams. Really, what leverage does Nylander have aside from withholding his services beyond the start of the season? And I honestly, with the depth that the Leafs have at forward, I don't know if that it scares them. I mean, if this really is going to be a test of leverage, I think the team's got way more of it here.
They do. And you know, let's face it, at the end of this, I don't know what the exact number is going to be, but it's probably going to look pretty good for the team because I don't see a scenario where he can get them that uncomfortable. And you're right. The fact that they have so many other talented players, I mean, it's hard to say this because, you know, in Toronto, everything gets overhyped and over-talked about, and there's a lot of media around. You know, but even the fact that one of the team's young stars isn't in camp is really not registered that highly because, you know, it's still a camp where you're having John Tavares there, and Auston Matthews looks great, and Mitch Marner's, you know, poised to have another good year. I mean, they have so many other their players that I don't think that Kyle Dubas is that uncomfortable in his shoes. And I don't sense even that he's a younger GM, a new GM, that he's, you know, going to find this to be too hard to take. I think he's a pretty reasonable guy. He's set a number here that isn't going to, as he said, break records. He's not looking to reset the market for a player of William Nylander's value. And, you know, to me, I look at, say, a contract like Nikolai Ehlers signed with Winnipeg for his second deal was a 7-year deal. It's a $6 million AAV. I think that that's the sort of thing the Leafs would be more than happy to do if William Nylander wanted it. But, you know, with the possibility that he's going to see a teammate in Auston Matthews get somewhere in the $10, $11, $12 million range, Mitch Marner a little below that. But, you know, I'm not sure he wants to be the third fiddle. But he doesn't have a lot he can do. And it can't be that comfortable for him sitting in Sweden right now as, you know, the team's about to play its first game tonight. And, you know, the season will be coming here quickly.
Boy, I just look at the Nikita Kucherov situation that Tampa was in a while ago. Why not bridge this guy? I believe you could go 5 years until which he's not an RFA anymore because he's only accrued 2 years service time. So why wouldn't you do a 4-year deal that keeps that cap hit very low and then he can, you know, feel the market or arbitration rights? I mean, if I'm Dubas and I've said on the record we can and we will when asked about keeping Matthews, Nylander and Marner after the signing of Tavares. I mean, I'm thinking the shorter the term here, the more cap space I have for others. But if you are going to give he and Marner, let's say, bridges and you go long term with Matthews, I mean, whatever that term is, that's your window, is it not?
It is, you know, and you know, the funny thing about his quote that they can keep them all signed. I mean, that is a fact. They have enough money to sign these three guys. But it does remain to be seen how much is left over to look after some of their teammates and to sign, you know, some of the young players that come behind them and other guys that are going to be needed if the Leafs, you know, do have a 5 or 7 year window where they feel they can have a team to win. And you know, I think similar challenges are facing the Winnipeg Jets. We've certainly seen other teams go down this road where, you know, it's nice to get some high end assets and young players. You know, obviously that's the fuel you need to really drive a team forward and an organization forward, but it is tough to pay them all. And, you know, we also sort of have another lockout, I think, on the mind, certainly of agents and players that are involved in these situations where they're looking to, you know, try to get the long-term deal now, because, you know, it's very possible 2 years from now, you know, when we go through the next CBA negotiations that, you know, say the term limits on contracts are brought back to 5 years or something shorter. And, you know, so if you say sign an 8-year deal now, you'd be getting even more security potentially than you might be able to get after that lockout or CBA negotiation, whichever way it ends up. I do think that that's a smaller factor in the background of all this. It's everyone's starting to feel that date coming now, and you know, only a year from now, we're going to find out for sure if the NHL and the NHLPA terminate the CBA or maybe go 2 extra years, but. It's a tough spot, I do think, for a guy like William Nylander, because as much as we can go around and look at it from all these angles, the team really controls his destiny and they're moving on without him in the short term. And it's really about when he's willing to maybe take a 2 or 3 or 4 year contract at a lower number and come back and play and put up points, and he'll get a big deal the next time around.
I don't mind that strategy at all if I'm a team as well either, because really what you're doing is, if you love the player and you've got more cap space later, rather than commit 8 years and then he's a free agent and walks, you've eaten up some of the younger years, and then you get the opportunity to lock him in for eight. I mean, theoretically, you're keeping a player for, let's say, 14 years instead of, you know, 12 or 11. I mean, I think that what the Tampa did with Kucherov could be a model here moving forward. They kept his cap in under $5 million back in 2016 in the fall. He signed a three-year deal with an AAV of 4.76. That was coming off a season with rather similar numbers to what Nylander had. He finished with 66 points and 30 goals. I mean, I don't think those are the worst comparables.
They're not, and I agree. And it can be good for the player, too. I mean, because Kucherov has now just signed his monster extension this summer. And, you know, that's basically going to cover the bulk of his career. And he still got his money and he got his security. He just had to wait a little longer for it. And in the meantime, Tampa had a bit more money to play with to build a team. And they've always been right at the cap the last couple of years. And yeah, they haven't got over the hump and won a Stanley Cup. But three of the last 4 years, they've been in the Eastern Conference Final. And one of them, they made a Stanley Cup Final. And you know, keeping players that talented at the number they did was one of the reasons they were able to do it. So, you know, I do think the Leafs will keep their cool and sort of they have all that in mind. I know that they've modeled all this out and you know, they know the implications of the decision they're about to make. And, you know, that's why I really do think that this one is of the you know, the handful of guys here we have left unsigned is likely to take the longest to get done.
Okay, two more quick ones on the Leafs, and I'll get you to keep it real tight because I want to move elsewhere. My fault for dragging on the Nylander stuff. Would you see Marner as another bridge candidate, given what we just talked about? And is there any way, if Austin Matthews says, I want 12.5 or $13 million, that they can say no, given what he might garner via an offer sheet and him being their best player?
I don't think there's much they can do. I mean, they're going to work with him, you know, much the way the Oilers worked with McDavid. If you remember, he originally was going to have a cap hit of $13.25 million, then ended up taking it down to 12.5, you know, after some further discussion. But I think this guy is, you know, he can't name his price, but you know, I don't see this one being as much of a fight. It's going to be trying to work together to keep things, you know, going. But, you know, I have no doubt he'll be one of the top players in the league. As of sometime next summer when he does that extension and signs an eight-year deal. You know, Marner's going to be more interesting. He's, you know, had a very strong second half last year. He's starting this season with John Tavares, and you know, they're going to be on the power play together too. I mean, I could see a scenario where he takes a jump up from where he was last season, you know, point-wise. He was at 69 points last year, 60 the year before that. And, you know, if he could get into the 70 and 80 range, you know, I think it's going to be tough to bridge him. You know, he's got an agent in Darren Ferris, a guy based in the Toronto area. He's had a few clients in recent years in this scenario withhold their services. Andreas Athanasiou and Josh Anderson last year, Tobias Reeder before that. And, you know, I think that one will be a more challenging negotiation for the Leafs next summer. And you know, Mitch Marner's more than happy with his spot on the team and the minutes he's going to get and who he's going to play with. I think to play out his deal and, you know, see where the cards fall. And we'll probably be having a discussion about him, similar to this one with Nylander, at this time next year.
Okay, let's move to some other RFAs. A player with leverage, I would think, is Shea Theodore, given the Nate Schmidt suspension, and that Vegas is clearly very much focused on the present, not so much at the roster in 2-3 years as we might have thought they would be a year ago. But, of course, you get to the final, timelines change, windows seized, and the owner, if you're winning, why wouldn't we just keep winning? What do you see happening here?
Well, the issue really between them is that the Golden Knights would prefer to keep him on a bridge deal, a shorter contract, and Shea Theodore is looking for some security. And you know, I could still see him ending up maybe at the bridge, but pushing the number a little higher as part of that negotiation. But I concur that this is maybe the best case scenario if you're in the shoes of a player in one of these situations where, you know, your team is a little bit undermanned at that position. You know, there's always the possibility, even still with all the preseason games, maybe another defenseman goes down and just, you know, further tightens the scenario that George McPhee's looking at for his roster. And you know, I would agree that Shea, you know, is in position here to, you know, exert a little discomfort on the team the longer he stays away. And you know, while my sense is that there's nothing close at the moment, I think there's a deal there to be made. You know, they kind of have to get together on the length of the deal first off, because, you know, that's been a sticking point earlier in their talks and, you know, to get them to this situation. And you know, maybe the answer for him is a shorter deal, but, you know, at a higher number than they talked about as a way to sweeten the pot and get him to join camp and be ready for opening night, because they're going to need him with the state of their blue line right now.
Tell me you're setting your alarm to watch the game from Beijing tomorrow. I know how keen you are to watch preseason hockey from China.
Negative. I would like to. I did see some of the highlights of the game a couple nights ago. But you know, that one isn't on my agenda right now. It was a regular season game maybe, but you know, as I say, I think there's enough preseason hockey as there is.
What does that trip represent? I mean, obviously we know the Olympics are going there. Apparently they did a 10-minute rule demonstration for fans in attendance using the mascots and other things like that. I mean, this is a very, very green hockey market. But having talked to some people that go over there and teach hockey and do some work in the industry, I mean, it's a sport that is participated in by the wealthiest of the wealthy in China. So there's sort of an interesting appeal there.
There is, and you know, what's also interesting is their national broadcast. So they have, you know, they broadcast NHL games there, and they've come to the Stanley Cup final the last 3 or 4 years. And you know, you don't have to get a huge percentage of the Chinese population watching to draw a big number. I mean, you know, you could get 1 million people with less than 1% of their population watching. And you know, I think that this really, I don't see this as one of those things where you say, oh, this is a brave new world for the NHL, and it's, but they're only half-heartedly doing this. I mean, the league plans to open an office in China. They've already entered some sponsorship agreements with some pretty influential people in that country. I certainly think all this is a precursor to seeing the NHL go back to the Olympics in Beijing in a few years' time. And you know, it does represent a place, you know, to make a lot more money. And you know, Europe in a lot of ways, I mean, there's still games over there to be played again this year. And I think we'll see that, you know, for the next number of years, because so many of the players in our sport come from the countries, you know, over there. But, you know, there's so many established leagues at you know, the top levels in Sweden, the KHL, which, you know, spans, you know, Russia and beyond, Finland, Switzerland, you know, the hockey countries, there's only so much more money to be squeezed out of there by the NHL. And you know, I think that Asia represents the opportunity maybe to expand your reach, your viewership audience, and, you know, maybe one day down the road, we're a little ways from this, but, you know, your player pool and get athletes from that country that can play the game. I mean, there's a number of people that have moved over there and have grown it. And so, you know, I think what these two games represent that the Flames and Bruins have played is just a very, you know, it's almost like the drip out of the tap right now of, you know, what eventually has to be a swimming pool filled. But, you know, it's a little bit more of getting, you know, an understanding of what the NHL is to people in that country, trying to connect. And, you know, I'm sure when we're old and gray, Ryan, this is going to be something that it's not going to seem quite as unusual, because there'll be far more established links between China and the NHL.
It's only a matter of time before Kunlun Red Star plays in the Stanley Cup final. I've been a fan since day one, Chris. You know that.
Get in on the ground floor right now.
That's right. Yeah. Unreal stuff. Hey, guy, enjoy Hockeyville, and I'm sure sign some autographs. That is pretty cool when all the bright lights of an NHL game, and not just that, but the broadcast, show up in a small town. Soak it all up. We'll chat Thursday.
Yeah, it was fun. I got stopped yesterday and someone called me Elliot Friedman, so I didn't know who should be more offended, me or Elliot, but I'll let
you
ponder
tell us.
That.
Were you like, oh, that's awesome, or you're like, oh, no, my hair is way more tidy than Elliot's?
I just took the picture and smiled and moved on and got a funny story out of it.
I love it. Thanks, buddy.
All right, see ya.
There's Chris Johnston, our NHL insider.